Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for members. Mix and match 1 pound strawberries or 6 ounce blueberries, raspberries, or blackberries for $2.99 each when you buy three. Take advantage of this exclusive digital deal. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast Untrimmed Twin Pack, $3.97 per pound, limit one package. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Hey, Sue, we got our buddy Ian Scherer from CNET coming up here at the bottom of the hour.
Yay.
The Consumer Electronics Show is in Las Vegas this week, so we'll have some fun with that. I'm playing a little UFO here because this is a band that I love, and it's Michael Schenker's birthday today, one of the greatest guitarists on the planet. He plays a flying V, and that flying V, or at least a flying V, featured in the film we're about to talk about, which I love so much. It is out on Netflix right now. It's called Norman's Rare Guitars, and you're going to want to see it. I promise you that.
I never thought about opening a store in my life. It was really a plan B.
This is as organic a place as I have ever been with respect to someone trying to put the right guitar in the right person's hand to create something great.
I saw Norm's store on YouTube first.
When social media got big, everybody could see the people jamming out on the couch, and you want to know what's going on, check social media.
One of the voices you heard there was Kiefer Sutherland. He is featured prominently in the director, the filmmaker, Devin Dillmore of Norman's Rare Guitars is with us this afternoon, 97.1 FM Talk. Devin, how are you?
I'm good, man. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I love the movie. We're going to talk about it. But first and foremost, are you safe out there? And is Norm safe in the guitar shop? Let's start with that.
Yeah. We're safe. It's been a it's been probably one of the worst fires I've ever seen. I definitely grew up here and dealing with lots of fires, but we're safe and we're all good. The winds have been in our favor. So as long as the winds keep pushing towards the ocean, we'll be okay, but, we feel saddened for everybody that's lost something, you know?
Well, you feature, there's a couple folks in this film that I'm particularly fond of, and Taylor Goldsmith is one of them. He is the lead singer and guitarist for a band called Dawes, and unfortunately, Taylor and his brother Griff, who's the drummer, I'm told they lost everything in this. They lost their studio, their guitars, and they lost everything, is what I heard today. Terrible.
Ouch. I did not know about that. I will reach out. That's
devastating, that's, right? Well, let's talk about Norman really Harris. Who is Norman Harris, Devin Dillmore? This guy, I'm ashamed that I didn't know who this guy is. I don't play guitar. I bought one in the 1970s, but this is literally a very important part of American music history, I think, this dude.
Yeah, I agree. And thanks for saying that. He truly is. He's a probably one of the kindest, most giving people I've ever met. He's now, 74 years old and probably one of my best friends now. He's just somebody who, followed a passion. First it was music, and then he followed the passion of, selling guitars. And he sold, early on his career, guitars to George Harrison and Bob Dylan and many others. And he's growing from a small business running out of his apartment to probably the world's most famous guitar shop. And it was a story that had to be told about a loving, caring man that has a passion for rare guitars.
So was this a friendship that you had before making the film, or how did you get into this?
Yeah, actually, I met his daughter. You know, I've been a filmmaker for 20 years or so, and I met his daughter, you know, early on in growing up, about 13 years old, and we had a great friendship. And I always loved Norman Storr, obviously, and going in there was just jaw dropping, to say the least. And COVID hit, and I had no work, and I always wanted to do a documentary about his store. And he was like, "Hey, yeah, you should do a documentary, like a little 10-minute thing." And I was like, "Norm, there's just no way that's going to happen. Your legacy is 50 years almost, and you have a lot of stories and a lot of great things that you do here." And so, yeah, when COVID hit and I didn't have work, I just decided it was time. And we went ahead and started shooting, and here we are today.
Well, it's amazing. So the guy is a musician from Miami. I guess at first he finds a jazz bass and he buys it for, very little money. And he sells it then. And then at one point, I think he gets an insurance settlement from something that's stolen for $1,200. And now he's got a little capital and he starts realizing maybe he's onto something. Right, Devin?
Exactly. That's exactly it. He bought a guitar. It broke in a car accident. He got a little bit of insurance money. And that's where it all started.
I want you to talk a little bit about Marlene, his wife, because she's an important part of this story. And she's a character, isn't she?
She's one of the best, and I love that you bring her up. Everybody loves her in the documentary, and she was pinnacle in Norm's selling guitars. You know, she came up with some really, really great ideas. She in the documentary, she talks about, I have this idea of, let's call people with horses because cowboys play guitar.
Yeah.
And that was just what a great idea. And that was really, really just a huge money maker for Norm, for him to find cheap guitars that nobody were playing anymore. And they were old, rare guitars that were probably in pretty good condition. And she's amazing.
Oh, she is. She's really good. So he gets this little reputation. He's in L.A. because he relocates from Miami. He opens a shop. And then at one point, I don't even know if the friend was identified in the film, but somebody says, "I got someone important, someone I'm going to bring over." And it happens to be a Beatle. You mentioned him before. George Harrison comes over. And
right.
That's one of the stories. And then all these other people start to visit the store, and it's really not just a store. It's a place where people go and share stories and play music and test the guitars and hang out. Right, Devin?
Yeah, 100%. It's, Sean Stockman from Boys to Men says it great. He says, it's a sweet hang. It's a place for people to go and hang out and jam, talk about, stories of the past and the future, and get inspired because they're picking up a new guitar or a really old guitar, and they get inspired to make a new track, I go there all the time still just to hang out.
I want to go there. I've never been. And honestly, Devin, I'm sort of ashamed because I consider myself someone who knows a lot about music and music history. And I, was a music guy myself in the 80s that I didn't know about. And I've heard of the shop before, but I didn't know the story. And it was really, really cool. And, you'll highlight the fact that Guitar Player Magazine does a piece on him. And that really takes him into another category, because then vintage guitars, he's sort of the father of vintage guitars, isn't he?
100%. His employee, John Tucci, says it really well in the documentary. He should be credited with, inventing the rare guitar store and that lifestyle of collecting. It's the truth. It's an amazing story. You really should visit. Everybody should visit. It's a gem in LA, which is, and it's actually in the Valley, which is over the Hollywood sign. It's always been in the Valley, and I grew up in the Valley. So I'm really excited that I got to do a documentary about the place I grew up, and everybody should visit. It's a really great experience.
It's on my list for sure. Norman's Rare Guitars is the name of the documentary. So I mentioned, as we bumped in with a band that most people probably don't even know, Devin, UFO, and I love Michael Schenker. One of the guitar players know Michael Schenker, but you featured this. It's this Amos 1958 Carina Flying V. I don't know if Michael Schenker played that version, but he loves the Flying V. But that featured guitar is $600,000. How does something like that become $600,000?
Well, Norman would be better at telling that story. But there's actually, we do have a new YouTube channel called Norman's Rare Guitars Film, and we're putting out a whole bunch of outtakes and extras. And I'm actually going to be uploading exclusive material to that YouTube page. And the first video that's going up is Joe Bonamassa, who acquired that guitar, and tells the whole story. And he talks about what it's insured for and why it is that famous. So I'll leave it up to your viewers to go on YouTube and check out that interview, because he says it so elegantly and amazing. And that guitar is just one of the very, very few that were made. And at the time, people didn't understand that guitar. They were used to, you know, Telecasters or older guitars, and that shape was just so new and so rare. They just made very few of them. And that's just the kind of small gist of the story. But it's that guitar is, it's over $500,000.
So one of the things that's cool about the YouTube channel, and, you know, I was unaware of that, but you feature clips in the film from some people that are really interesting. Like, there's a very young Post Malone, when his name is not even Post. What's his original name? Like, what's his real name?
Austin.
Yeah, Austin. So he's in there, and he knows about Norms, and I don't know how old he is, but he doesn't have any tattoos or anything like that. And then there's this guy. I'm a huge Marcus King guy. And one of the shop guys at Norms Guitar Shop realizes that Marcus King might be something a little special. So he sits down, and he looks like a teenager. He starts playing, but listen when he sings. I've been drifting and I'm drifting, baby. And that voice just blew them away in that shop, and Marcus King became I don't know if he's a big star, but people in the blues and the guitar world, they certainly know Marcus King, don't they, Devin?
100%. And you know, that video of Marcus King singing in the store is really what kickstarted his career. He was already ready, or was already on his way to becoming, you know, a singer. But, you know, we're lucky in a time where we can, you know, Norman can upload these videos to YouTube and really showcase up and coming talent. And that's what he did with Marcus King. When that video got uploaded to YouTube 6, 7, 8 years ago, it really helped Marcus a lot, because everybody, you know, commented on it, saw that video, shared it. It went viral, and it's amazing the platform Norman has created for up and coming artists.
It really is.
Marcus, yeah, it was just a great example of what a viral video can do for somebody.
I watched that video. It has now 1.8 million, and it deserves to have that, because Marcus was incredible in that. There's, and damn you, I gotta say, damn you, Devin, because you made me cry when I was watching the film. There's a great story about a young man by the name of Kyle Grady, and I don't want you to share his story, because I think it would be awesome for people to experience it when they watch the movie, but Richie Sambora is involved in that, and you made me cry when you had to tell that part of the story, so damn you. That's what I say.
I'm sorry. You know, it's important for people to feel something when they're watching a film, and Norman, you know, he did something great, and hopefully everybody can watch that part, and
it's really good.
Feel the same way you did. You know?
It's really good. Is Lenny Kravitz like the coolest dude on the planet? He has to be, right?
100%.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you've confirmed that. I don't think I need to ask anything more about that. Well, this is fantastic. Thank you so much for jumping on here, because I really enjoyed the movie. I have such a passion for music. I talked about the Yacht Rock documentary a couple of weeks ago, which I think in its own right is really good. But this, and by the way, Devin, I noticed that you this is your film. I mean, a lot of documentaries may have a director and an editor and all this, but you did most of this movie yourself, didn't you?
I did 100% everything you see. Shot it, edited it, filmed it. Asked the questions with my producing partner, Sarah, Norman's daughter. And it's 100% mine, man.
Well, everything, nice work. This movie needed to be made, and I think you know that. It's a guy that deserves a legacy. Is he in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Because if he's not, he should be.
He's on his way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Devin, and congratulations on a wonderful, wonderful film. It's on Netflix. And then for folks who don't have Netflix, it'll be streaming a little later in the spring elsewhere, right?
Correct. Worldwide around April.
Awesome. Thank you, Devin. Congratulations on a great project.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. We'll go out with a little Michael Schenker and UFO. He's not featured in the film, but I love Michael Schenker. And that Flying V is quite something. By the way, I priced out the Fender Mustang that I bought in the 1970s, Sue. It was a 1971 guitar with racing stripes. And that guitar is anywhere between $6,000 and $9,000 at this
Ooh.
Point. Yep, I screwed up on that one.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+. And we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Audio cut of the day before the afternoon is up. We're going to spend a little time in the next segment before audio cut of the day with State Rep Steve Butts, who was on the roundtable. But he's, you know, an insurance guy, and he's got some thoughts on what's happening in California and what the implications of some of this might be relating to insurance. So that's coming up here in a few minutes as well. You know, the Consumer Electronics Show took place in Las Vegas this week, and we have not hooked up with our friend Ian Scher, who is a tech whiz for CBS News. He's with us this afternoon. Happy New Year, Ian. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Happy New Year to you as well.
Let's start, before we get to CES, with the TikTok arguments before the Supreme Court. I didn't really hear much about that today. I was focused on some other things. What can you tell us about what happened?
Yeah, so it's a lot of what you expected, right? The lawyers for TikTok said that the law is unconstitutional and that it broke the First Amendment. As you remember, the law that was passed by Congress, signed by President Biden, effectively allows the United States to declare that an app is owned by a foreign adversary and block it from U.S. shores. And the only way to stop that would be to have the foreign adversary sell that app to someone else. And so the argument that TikTok said was that that takes away the ability for Americans to have free speech, because TikTok is a popular platform. And the Biden administration said, look, it's the same speech that's happening on the internet, and it can still happen even after TikTok were sold. But they didn't entirely deal with the question of whether or not TikTok is owned by a Chinese company. They said simply that they want the Chinese government to not be able to have access to user data from Americans.
So we're just going to have to wait, though, and see what happens, right? It's still a waiting game?
It is a waiting game. It doesn't appear that the court is going to wait for Trump. He had asked the court to wait until he was president to weigh in. And then the other thing is that it's not clear whether or not the court is really going to go up against the law either. It seems as though from the questions that the justices asked, that they, you know, a lot of the legal experts think that they're probably going to uphold it, which would be a very interesting choice and raise a lot of questions about the future of how we interpret the First Amendment.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Ian Scher is here, a CBS News tech expert. Let's talk about the Consumer Electronics Show, CES, 58 years in Las Vegas. They used to do two, if I remember correctly, Chicago and Las Vegas, but 140,000 people checking out new gadgets this week in Las Vegas. I think it's still going on, isn't it?
It is, and well, it's pretty much finished now. But it's a really interesting event. Of course, it's always fun because there's these wacky, interesting gadgets, and not just, you know, the cool, just awe-inspiring stuff. I have to say, one of the coolest things I heard about was that they had these see-through TVs that literally look like a sheet of glass, like it's a window. But you turn it on and it's a TV.
Whoa.
And you turn it off and it's just glass again. And to me, that is just super cool. Like, I hate these ugly black boxes I have all over my office right now, right? Like, especially when they're not turned on and doing something, they're just sitting there taking up space. It would be great if it was just a piece of transparent glass.
Absolutely. Well, so, you know, there was an era in the CS for the longest time. And I you know, I spoke of him fondly last week because it was a guy that I got to know. And I don't know if you ever came across Jim Barry. Did you know Jim from the Consumer Electronics Association?
I know of him. I never met him myself.
So I started, you know, talking CES with Jim Barry 30 years ago when I was in Columbia, Missouri. And he was a guy that would go across the country and bring some gadgets and gizmos. And he would promote consumer electronics and he would promote the CES shows as well. And then he came to Milwaukee and I was up there. And then he would visit here in St. Louis when I was back in St. Louis. So I knew him for literally 2.5 decades and he passed away a few years ago. But I bring it up because I was always passionate about this show. And for the longest time with Jim, you know, especially if you go back to the mid-2000s, it was always about new TVs. New TV, bigger, better. Finally, we get to TVs that are thin and light. But, you know, television technology, I know that it's certainly changed, but that's not really the focus of where people are spending money these days.
Well, I would say that TVs generally have always struggled from this kind of reason for being, right? A lot of people tend to buy a new TV and then hold on to it for a very long time. I'm a great example. I am like an Uber nerd, right? But I only bought a TV in 2010 to replace a TV from 1995. And then I bought a TV in 2019 to replace the TV from 2010. I'm like the worst of those consumers for them, right? So, but I also think I'm not that unusual. I think a lot of people just hold on to their TVs until they literally don't work for them anymore. And then buy a new one. And that is not how the industry tends to make money.
Yeah. So what was hot this year? What is hot? A lot of the automation, the home automation, things along those lines? Or what are people buzzing about out there?
Probably the biggest thing that you would expect would be AI. But it wasn't the way that you think. It was a lot of, you know, the prove it time for AI. Show us that this can actually be useful. So, you know, it straddles wacky and useful. But they had a barbecue smoker there that what it does is that it uses AI and sensors to actually be able to identify, knowing what type of meat is in there and all that type of stuff, when you should be basting the meat. And then if you forget and you don't open it up, it'll actually adjust the temperature to make sure that you don't dry it out too quick. So that's kind of cool, right? I can get behind that.
Yeah,
right?
Heck yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, and then there was a lot of also solar stuff. We're starting to see a lot of interest in solar, partially, I think, because so many of us need energy wherever we go, right? I mean, battery packs are something that everyone buys nowadays. I remember when it used to be a thing that only nerds like me carried around. And so now there are things like beach umbrellas that are solar, and even, you know, on the wackier side, a hat that, you know, for like when you're taking a hike, that's solar. I don't know if you need a hat, but a beach umbrella, maybe, you know, right? And then finally, you know, the robot vacuums we all know, right?
Oh, yeah.
So they've been adding more stuff to them lately. Like, you know, they have mops. Some of them have sensors in them that are able to identify if your pet left a present and avoid it so it doesn't smear it all around. Well, now they've added a robot arm to these things, and it does one of two things. One of them will actually jut out from it, like make the noise like a robot, and come out and pick up your socks and move them out of the way if we're that lazy, and some of us are, so I get it. The other one, it actually goes on the bottom, and what it does is it's kind of a little kickstand, because some of us have these lips between like our kitchen and the next room or whatever, and some of the robots can't get over them.
Oh, yeah,
well, now that kickstand will help them to get over that little hump. Yeah, so,
that.
You know, not world-changing, but hey, if it picks up my socks and gets through the kitchen, I'm all for it.
Sue talked about, I think it was you that was talking about the Kirin's electric salt spoon, Sue. Didn't you cover that?
Yes, this is so bizarre.
Have you heard about this one?
Yes.
All right, so you want to describe it?
I remember it, and I remember the previous thing that everyone talked about, the happy fork.
So this is something that you put in your mouth and you can put on your tongue and it makes low sodium foods taste saltier. Or you can put salt on those foods too. I don't know which is better. You don't get the sodium then.
Well, the idea is to get you to eat less salt, which
yes.
If you have heart condition like my father used to, then, you know, maybe that's the case, right? And apparently if you add a little bit of electricity to your food, it'll make it taste saltier, which is news to me, but I'll trust it for now. You know, I think that it's an interesting idea, but it's worth noting that this, that the Happy Fork, and it was H-A-P-P-I, you can look it up on Google. It came out like something like 15 years ago, 10 years ago, and it was supposed to help you remember not to eat too much because it would vibrate if you were eating too quickly, right? It would track when you were moving the fork around.
Right.
And it didn't really end up doing that well, even though the idea was pretty cool. I'm not sure if the low sodium diet is going to be where everyone's going either.
No,
Well, you know what? You always know yourself when you're overeating, so there's really no need for a reminder. I think that's why
Right. I don't need a Jiminy Cricket to tell me how I'm feeling already.
Exactly.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
How do people, you know, in this era where we don't go to stores anymore, we shop online, how do people, and I know marketing is involved, that's how companies get the word out. My wife works in marketing, but how the hell do you find out about all these things? They get featured in an electronic show. And then, you know, do you ever hear about them again?
Well, honestly, that's part of what's interesting about how the internet is changing. So Salesforce put out a recent report, I think it was Salesforce, where they said that AI chatbots on various websites, including Amazon and everything, are actually becoming a go-to place where you type in, hey, I need to buy a gadget for my nerdy 40-something-year-old cousin, what do you recommend? He likes Star Wars, right? And it'll actually recommend a product. The other thing also is that still a lot of people tend to go with stuff like the best of lists that a lot of publications put out. Obviously, Oprah's favorite thing of the year is still a popular thing. So that tends to be it, but it's not exactly marketing, right? And a lot of times, it's really about whether or not this product is good. I will say, though, I am impressed, having little kids now, how positioning in a flyer, like, you know, those things they send to our home still, can make a kid think, oh, that toy looks really cool, just because of where it is in the flyer and how it is when you open the page. So that stuff does work.
Interesting.
Well, that's modern day marketing, I guess you would say.
There you go.
Right. Well, it's always fun to talk about gadgets and gizmos. We love it. Anything else that kind of popped from this particular show?
You know, I think the thing that I am going to be watching out for the most, because I am this type of person, is that there are a lot of glasses that were shown off at this show that have computer vision in them, right? There's been a lot of talk about putting a computer image on top of the real world. So, you know, imagine having an arrow in front of you telling you where to go when you're walking. And nobody's been able to get it right so far. They still don't seem to be perfect, but we're getting ever closer. And I don't think it's this year. I don't think everyone's going to go run out and buy glasses, but it's getting a little closer all the time. And I'm always really interested in that.
So we got, and I haven't even tried them on, but some of the, I guess it would be what, the Apple Vision Pros?
How is that?
Well, I haven't used it yet. My daughter's been messing around with it, but I haven't put them on yet. So
you're an Apple guy. How could you not have played with it yet?
You.
Well, we just got it last week, so I have not played with it. I am an Apple guy, and I love my new iPhone and all of that, but I intend to do that. But I'm a little surprised. I think that stuff, I remember putting goggles on maybe for the first time 3 or 4 years ago, and it seems like that's still kind of a slow area of growth.
Yes, the industry had hoped that it was going to be the next big thing after the iPhone, and it hasn't proven to be that. It may still change the way that a lot of us work and especially play video games and stuff like that. I spoke with Chevron a while back about how they're using some of these things because they have cameras and they're connected to the internet. If you're on the middle of a tanker in the middle of nowhere in the ocean, you have an internet connection, something goes wrong, instead of having to fly some expert out to that tanker, they're instead able to just get on a video call, right? And they say, hey, move your head closer to this thing and let me see what it looks like. And they're able to diagnose the problem there. That's super cool. But most of us aren't fixing tankers all day long. So it's a tough one.
Well, I know you live out east now. You used to live out west. You were in Northern California. But just some thoughts on what we've been seeing. I'm guessing you might have some friends affected there. It's just devastating, Ian.
Friends and family. It's really sad. And part of the really tough part is that a lot of the people who are being caught up in this, you know, they were not expecting this. Like last year at this time, I don't know if you remember, there was flooding, right? And so a lot of what they're up against is that the climate just keeps changing on them over and over. And, you know, I'm dealing with that here in D.C. too, right? We used to have real snow, and then over the years it's gotten warmer and warmer. We have less snow.
Yeah.
But we had a real snowstorm this year. School was out for the whole week because they couldn't even get 9 inches off the roads quick enough.
Well, we had the same situation. You were in the same storm that we were. And my daughter went to school one day this week. She went yesterday. And then they were off again because we got like a half an inch or whatever it was today. It was a little bit more than that. But, you know, we panicked throughout the area. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
And it used to be it was normal, right?
Right.
I think that's what's unfortunate. I mean, my heart breaks for so many people. But the hard part is that they don't know if they're going to flood or be on fire 1 year to the next. That is what's really scary.
Well, and maybe even a couple of weeks, because look, the rainy season technically kicks in here at the end of January. So we could have mudslides, sadly, in a few weeks as well. It's just awful. Ian Scherer, Happy New Year. Thank you so much for giving us the briefing here this afternoon on CES. We'll talk soon.
Absolutely.
All right. Take care, Ian. All right, 5:47, we had a great Reardon Roundtable. You can always use the Odyssey app, go back a couple hours and listen to our conversation. We had State Rep Steve Butts, Jane Duker on the panel, also former St. Louis County Councilman and Police Chief Tim Fitch. But Steve was nice enough to circle back around. He lives in the city not too far. We're going to talk a little bit about the insurance implications of the fires. State Representative Butts, how are you?
Mark, I'm good. And yeah, I mean, everybody is kind of glued to the TVs a little bit watching these wildfires, and it is a major tragedy, of course, for these people who lost their homes, but it's going to have a profound and lasting impact for many years on the insurance industry.
You know, I said this on the roundtable. I honestly, because I've been watching this nonstop, and we've been covering it nonstop, but I can't get away from thinking about these people who have been affected from a variety of perspectives, right? Many of them don't have a home. Maybe you have a home, but you've been evacuated. Maybe you have a home, but you don't have power. You don't have water.
Right.
Maybe you have a home and you can't breathe because there's so much smoke out there. You have a mortgage that you still have to pay. You may have to rent something. Your kids might not have a school. It's unbelievably overwhelming.
It is. And, you know, it hits close to home. Our oldest son and his wife, they live in Southern California. They live in Long Beach. So they're about 40 miles from the actual fires because, you know, Los Angeles County is a big, big county.
You were just out there a few weeks ago.
I am, and I'm going back in 2 more weeks.
Right.
So what it's going to do in the insurance industry, so already there had been a lot of pressure in California, and I'm just talking about it from a homeowner's point of view.
Right.
Companies, major companies, and I'll just say State Farm, for example, has been canceling and non-renewing virtually every homeowner's policy in that state. Safeco, a company I sell for, has been curtailing coverage, and that's because of past wildfires. This is going to only exacerbate that problem.
But isn't it also because now, again, a lot of this stuff is coming fast and furious, but there was some sort of restriction that the state was trying to impose on State Farm when it came to the way that they assess risk, right?
So Missouri, not to get too in the weeds, but Missouri, we're a file and use state. It's pretty friendly for the insurance companies. So, for example, I think people have been opening up their homeowners renewals for the past half a year or so, and it's way up because of hail. So they're changing deductibles, for example. So in Missouri, we're a file and use state, and there aren't any real caps that affect what companies have to do to adjust rates. In California, I don't know the percentage, but there was a percentage that was quite low, so low that the insurance companies were like, we can't begin to address rate for risk. So I'll tell you this, what we're going to do, we're going to pull out of your state. And I thought, boy, California would change that law pretty quick, but that has not happened. And you will see, I was just watching last night on the news, a couple families saying, yeah, they still had homeowners insurance, but there was an exclusion on wildfires.
Really?
Similar to having homeowners down in Florida with an exclusion on storm
That's
surge
right.
and hurricanes. So yeah, if you get robbed or there's a gas explosion, there's some coverage. But if you exclude wildfires in California, I mean, it'd be like us excluding hail in Missouri. So the availability of coverage, but there's still going to be a lot of covered claims. This is going to be the largest or one of the absolute largest insurance payout events in the history of the country, and it is going to affect. I get this from my clients all the time. Why do I have to pay for hurricanes in Florida and wildfires in California? I said, that's the way insurance works. It's the people that don't have claims are actually paying for the people that do.
Well, one of the things I was thinking about, and this is probably not the number one concern of the folks out there, but just from an assessor's perspective, how the hell would you get enough people in there? Because you got to look at every property. You can't accept the word, hey, my house is, you know, burned down. That's just got to be an incredibly cumbersome, you know, exercise, right? I know they do it at hurricanes and other disaster zones. There's a process, I'm sure.
Technology is helping. I mean, all the insurance companies we sell for, the national ones, they all use drones. They're going to be flying over.
All right, so they use the technology.
They do. They do for sure. And in many of these cases, I mean, when a house, as opposed to most claims that we're used to dealing with where there's some adjusting of a claim, when you have a complete total loss of a home, they just pay out the policy limits. So there's no verification. They just look at it and say that home's completely
gone. Well, that's good. Yeah, and I said assessor. I meant adjuster, right?
Yeah, the
insurance adjuster.
Yeah, you're right.
So it really is incredible. And, you know, I think looking from afar, I've said many times the last couple of days, Steve, it took me a while to grow up to the point where I can put things in perspective. But we're bitching about the snow and the ice and the cold and all that. And I'm thinking everything that's going on out there. And I have many friends, as you know, out there. Nobody's been directly affected. But, you know, unfortunately, there's still time. You know, there's some fires that even popped up today. So I think everyone's kind of on high alert.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tragedy. We got to pull for these, you know, people, feel for them, pray for them, but and hopefully in time they'll recover. But how you rebuild this large of an area, I don't know.
I don't know how you do it. I mean, don't you think you kind of have to start with a bunch of some sort of ships that are going to haul as much equipment like bulldozers and tractors and things like that to just, you're basically building a whole new subdivision.
Correct. Just to clear the field and to level it, to they could even get started to think about rebuilding. And I know there are some people, I heard a little clip yesterday with you there, you can imagine how stressed out the actual victims of the fire are. There's some people that died in this fire, but the 10,000 plus homes, I mean, it's
awful.
It's amazing.
It is
horrible.
You know, we can always say this in the moment because our memories aren't great, but look, we've both lived on this planet fairly long time. We've seen some pretty big disasters around the world, around the planet. This has to be one of the biggest that I've ever seen.
This is right at the top with those, which is hard to believe.
Well, just kind of think about that this weekend. If you're bummed out about something, put it into perspective. Steve Butts, great roundtable this afternoon. Great to see you. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, Mark.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Okay, I have time for this. I'm going to actually go off the wildfire topic and some of the politics. This is fascinating, though. We heard from Mark Zuckerberg changing some policies at Facebook, Meta, this week. Listen to the story that he tells with Joe Rogan about the pressure from the Biden administration.
These people from the Biden administration would call up our team and, like, scream at them and curse. And it's like, these documents are, it's all kind of out there.
Did you record any of those phone calls?
I don't think we, but I think
I want to listen.
I mean, there are emails. the emails are published. It's all kind of out there. And they're like, and basically it just got to this point where we were like, no, we're not gonna take down things that are true. That's ridiculous. They wanted us to take down this meme of Leonardo DiCaprio looking at a TV talking about how 10 years from now or something, you know, you're going to see an ad that says, okay, if you took a COVID vaccine, you're eligible for, for this kind of payment, like this sort of like class action lawsuit type meme. And they're like, no, you have to take that down. And we just said, no, we're not going to take down humor and satire. We're not going to take down things that are true. And then at some point, I don't know, it flipped a bit. I mean, Biden, when he gave some statement at some point, I don't know if it was a press conference or to some journalists, where he basically was like, these guys are killing people. And I don't know, then like all these different agencies and branches of government basically just like started investigating coming after our company. It was brutal.
Every time we hear more details of what happened during that period, it's even more frightening. There you go. Mark Zuckerberg on with Joe Rogan. Sue, have a great weekend.
Hey, you too, Mark.
A lot of football this weekend. Going to have fun.
Go
we'll be
Steelers.
Back. Yeah, you know what? I'm okay with that.
Are you?
Go Pack Go, too, is what I'd say. All right. We're back on Monday.
Get more at 971talk.com.